This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Tale of Beauty and Beast by Melanie Sellier. Narrated by Esther Wayne. Part 1. The Castle. Chapter 1. I had been riding all day, and the sun was now starting to set in spectacular streaks of red and orange across the plains. But I still pressed on, too afraid to stop. A howl rose above the sound of the wind, and I shivered from more than just the cold. Did that call sound closer than the last? A second and then a third wolf took up the chorus, and I decided they were definitely closer. What would happen when night fell? Maybe I should stop and try to light a fire now. Would the flames be enough to keep them away from me and my mount? I looked at the emptiness surrounding me. Where would I find fuel for a fire in this desolation? Sophie, where are you now? It's starting to get dark. My twin's projection sounded in my mind and broke me from my panicked thoughts. I took a calming breath before answering. I'm riding. There's still plenty of light left here. The fear had been mounting all day, but I had tried to keep it out of my projections to Lily. She was worried enough about me as it was, but it was hard to keep the emotion away from my words, especially when I was sending my thoughts directly into her mind. She almost certainly suspected the truth, but she also knew I wasn't going to change my mind and turn back. He promised I would be safe, I reminded myself. My new betrothed. He promised. The exact words of his missive had been, I cannot stop you sending an escort, of course, but only my betrothed is guaranteed safe passage. Not exactly an encouraging message, but it had explicitly guaranteed my safety. And since he had demanded I come alone and immediately, he could hardly fault me for stepping outside of his directions, which meant my current predicament was entirely his fault. My twin's earlier warnings repeated in my mind. He's a monster, a beast. You can't trust him. She was right, of course. At least as far as we knew. And I didn't trust him. Not at all. But I did trust in the power of the ancient laws, the ones that created a formal, binding betrothal between the heir or ruler who called a princess tawny and the princess who won the secretive competition. The laws that bound every person in these lands, and decreed that not even the one who had called the tawny could disrupt the subsequent betrothal, which surely included not letting the bride-to-be get eaten by wolves. I had seen the power of this ancient magic all too clearly during the long weeks of the tawny, the competition Lily and I had been forced into when we arrived in these lands. Our diplomatic delegation from our own kingdom of Arcadia in the Four Kingdoms had arrived at just the wrong moment. And since the High King himself had set up the tawny many generations ago, we had been unable to escape it. I had seen the ancient magic create realms and bring them crashing down. I had even seen it hold back death. It was this same magic that had apparently cursed the beast's kingdom of Palinar. Surely it could also keep me safe. And so here I was, riding my horse all alone through an empty wilderness while wolves howled around me. Not exactly a promising beginning to a betrothal. But the ominous words of my new fiancé's message had been clear. Only I was safe. Only I was protected by the tawny. And it wouldn't have been only guards accompanying me if I had waited. My twin Lily and her new betrothed, Crown Prince Jonathan of Marin, would have insisted on coming as well. Who knew how many lives might have been lost in their efforts to protect me? Where are you going to spend the night? Lily's worried projection reminded me that she was still adjusting to the whole idea of me going off on my own. I hadn't exactly discussed it with her when I had snuck out of the palace on a stolen horse. I stroked the neck of my mare, Chestnut. I had befriended her weeks ago, and she had happily accompanied me today. The poor thing hadn't known what she was getting herself into, of course. I'll let you know when I work that out, I responded, injecting some humour into my projection. It gave me comfort to carry my twin's presence with me in my mind, even if she could offer no practical assistance. We had never been apart before, and I liked the reminder that we were still connected, that we had a link no one could break, a christening gift from our godmother, a greater bond than ever twins have shared before. And with our old nanny having passed away, only John knew of the secret connection between Lily and me that had resulted from our gift, which meant this beast was wrong if he thought he could isolate me from the rest of the kingdoms by asking me to come alone. My betrothed had secrets aplenty, but I brought some of my own with me. The sun had almost disappeared below the horizon now, and I could still see neither shelter nor fuel for a fire. A flash of movement made me whip my head around, but the plains appeared empty. The mare faltered and then picked up her pace without being asked. I crouched low over her neck, encouraging her speed, and peeked under my arm. Another flash of movement, and this time I caught a glimpse of grey. A wolf? My breath quickened, and the horse must have picked up my tension since she increased her speed even more. I looked again, but could now see nothing. How did they hide themselves in this vast emptiness? More of the magic of the curse, I supposed. My heart beat wildly, and I tried to calculate how much strength remained in my mare. She had alternated between a walk and a trot all day, so she couldn't have much stamina left. I guessed she was running on instinct and fear right now, and not much else. I scanned the horizon again, searching for something. Anything. The final rays of the setting sun blinded me and made the landscape strange and unfamiliar. I squinted through it, not sure what I was even hoping to see. A black dot wavered against the light and seemed to grow bigger. Its shape looked unnatural, too square to be an animal and far too large to be a wolf. So I nudged the mare, angling her toward it. As it grew even bigger, I glanced back again and this time got a clear glimpse of two grey shapes racing after us. My horse ran at a full gallop now, and my hair and dress streamed behind me. Even so, we neared the approaching object at a surprising pace. It was clearly moving toward us as fast as we rushed toward it. I began to pull up on the reins just as the last of the sun slipped below the horizon and the blinding light disappeared. The mare responded reluctantly as I blinked in the twilight haze and tried to understand what I was seeing. The object, a large travelling carriage, had also slowed, so that we both came to a stop at the point of meeting. I twisted in the saddle, but the only sign I could see of my pursuers was a whisk of grey tail before they disappeared off into the fast encroaching darkness. I turned back to the carriage. The coach itself looked perfectly ordinary, and yet I couldn't stop staring at it. No horses pulled it, and no coachman directed it. It stood still in the middle of this strange wilderness, as if it had arrived at a prearranged stop. "Good evening," I called, tentatively. No one responded. I looked around again, but the wolves had not returned. Whatever this strange apparition, it seemed to offer us some protection from them. I swung down from Chestnut, keeping a tight hold on the reins, and approached the window. I couldn't see the inside in the evening gloom, so I took a deep breath and opened the door. I reached out toward Lily in my mind as I did so, anticipating the need for extra courage, but nothing greeted me except the empty inside of a carriage. What is it? She responded instantly, clearly on edge. I don't know. What do you mean? I chewed on a loose strand of hair as I peered inside, wondering if I'd missed something.
I've found a carriage, but it's empty.
In the middle of that wasteland everyone is always talking about. Maybe someone abandoned it when their party got attacked by bears or something. She didn't sound happy.
Maybe, except it drove up to me.
It drove up to you? Well, ask the coachman then. Lily sounded a little exasperated now.
There isn't a coachman, or horses.
The carriage just arrived on its own.
What? That's it. I'm coming after you.
She didn't say anything else, but she hadn't completely cut off the projection toward me either, and I knew her well enough to read the emotions she was sending. I could easily imagine the scene, Lily jumping up, ready to storm off into the night, and poor John being left to guess at the content of our silent conversation. After a moment, her emotions calmed and then changed. I cut the connection on my end, too tense to cope with her new feelings of tenderness and love. Obviously, John had managed to talk her down. I spotted a piece of parchment resting on the floor of the carriage and leaned awkwardly in to pick it up. Every minute the light faded more, so I rushed to read it. To my betrothed, this carriage will provide you, and only you, safe passage to my castle. It is the official carriage of the royal family of Palinar, and nothing in this land will harm you while you are inside. Tie your horse behind, and it will remain safe also. Sleep inside the carriage, and do not attempt to alight at night. Prince Dominic. I frowned and went back to the beginning, but I could barely make out the words in the increasing darkness, and I didn't want to waste the remaining moments of dim light. Hurrying, I unsaddled Chestnut, thrusting the saddle and saddlebags into the carriage. I rubbed her down and secured her to the back. The whole thing was madness, utter madness, but I had no choice. The plains had offered no other option, and the wolves had run away at the arrival of this magical vehicle. I stepped inside just as blackness overtook my surroundings. I waited a moment, but no magical light appeared to break the dark. Too bad. I groped blindly through my saddlebags and managed to cobble together an evening meal by feel. I didn't bother attempting to wash or tidy myself in any way. What would be the point? I explained the situation to Lily as I ate, glad to be able to project and chew at the same time. She seemed incredulous but accepting. "Perhaps you're right," she projected with a sigh. "Perhaps this betrothed of yours will protect you."
"Don't sound so unhappy about it."
She laughed at that, before sighing again.
"I just wish you hadn't gone off on your own."
I didn't bother to reply. We'd already spent over an hour discussing it earlier in the day, and my muscles ached after a full day in the saddle. It had been too long since I'd had the opportunity to go for a long ride, and my body was out of practice. I arranged myself as comfortably as possible on one of the seats of the carriage.
"Good night, Lily."
"Good night, Sophie." Her warmth settled around me like a long hug, and I sent the same comfort back to her. She had no idea how much I wished she could have been here in person. Despite her presence in my mind, I had never felt so alone. I had never been so alone. Perhaps it was that loneliness that shaped my dreams, because as I drifted off to sleep, I could have sworn I heard the familiar chatter of servants. Only these ones seemed to be discussing me. Apparently they found me beautiful enough, although for what they didn't say. It was my strength, they doubted. I wanted to be outraged. I had fought my way through a grueling tourney and then braved the wastelands alone to get here. But I was already sinking deeper into dreamless sleep. And maybe the dream voices were right. They came from my own subconscious, after all. And who knew me better than myself?
Chapter 2. A jolt made me roll off the seat of the carriage and crash to the floor. We had started moving. I groaned and pushed myself to my feet, rubbing my hip bone. The wheels hit a bump, and I staggered before hurriedly sitting down. Rubbing my eyes and yawning, I grumbled to myself at the rude awakening. After checking that Chestnut trotted behind us, I munched on a cold and unappetizing breakfast. I wondered how long before Lily woke up. Then if I could possibly fall back asleep while the carriage was moving. And then I surveyed the chaos again and sighed. I supposed I had better tidy up. The Palinaran royal family had several castles and palaces, and I wasn't completely sure where I was going. which meant we could arrive at any time. I tidied all of my belongings neatly back into the saddlebags and used a small mirror to tidy up my hair and dress. When I felt as satisfied with my appearance as was possible in the circumstances, I settled back to watch out the window and wait developments. When the light began to fade, I gloomily surveyed the chaos of my belongings that had once again spread throughout the carriage. The hope with which I had packed them in the morning now seemed foolish and naive. I sighed. Lily had done her best to keep me entertained, but there was only so much she could do from afar. She had even read me one of my favourite fairy tales for a couple of hours, but then she had been called away by other duties. She was betrothed to Marin's crown prince, after all, and Marin was currently full of foreign delegations. Treaty negotiations were still underway between our own kingdom, far away in the Four Kingdoms, and all of these lands except Palinar. She could hardly come up with an excuse for spending the whole day locked in the library reading. I had thoroughly examined the inside of the carriage by this point, of course, and had been unimpressed to find my betrothed had failed to include any supplies. Thank goodness I had packed myself a generous supply of food and water before fleeing Marin. As I munched on another cold meal, each one was becoming more unappetizing than the last, my thoughts dwelt on my betrothed, the beast. Just the thought of him made me shudder. With revulsion or fear, I wasn't entirely sure. I shouldn't be surprised at the lack of provisions. Why would a cold-hearted monster consider my comfort at all? Millie, John's cousin and a new friend, had told us all about how each Princess Tawny was shaped by the ruler or heir who called it. It made sense, since its purpose was to find his perfect match and true love. And our Tawny had been frightening and dangerous, a terrifying glimpse into the dark nature of the Crown Prince of Palinar. So powerful was his curse that it had reached out through him to corrupt the Tawny itself. What awful acts had he committed to bring such a curse upon himself? I knew I couldn't possibly be the true love for such a man, if man he still was. The truth was not that the Tawny had chosen me, but that I had cheated, using the secret connection between Lily and me to circumvent the rules and gain an advantage. She had planned to sacrifice herself to save me, but it was a sacrifice I wasn't willing to let her make. I had never tried to work against her before, and my victory had been hard won. A hollow victory, if not for the look on Lily's and John's faces at our joint betrothal ceremony. I would sacrifice myself again for my twin's happiness. Except I was determined to make it a short-term sacrifice. As I had knelt beside the beast's proxy at our betrothal ceremony, I had promised myself that I would travel to Palinar and find a way to break our betrothal, a way that didn't violate the ancient laws. Then I would find out what the beast had done to curse his people, I would defeat him, and I would free them. I would make sure that he could never hurt me again. And then I would return to Marin. It was an excellent plan, except that I had no idea whatsoever how to do it, and 2 full days of travel hadn't brought any enlightenment. When I fell asleep for the second night, I didn't let my mind listen for any voices. I didn't want to know what my subconscious thought. Sophie? Lily's grim-sounding projection woke me even before the carriage began to move the next morning.
What is it?
I came awake quickly, having only been half-dozing. We've just received word from Marin's prison. Cole has disappeared.
What?
I gasped.
What about Sir Oswald and Karina?
I asked, referring to Cole's father and sister. They're still there, and claim to know nothing about his escape. Lily sounded tired. The sky had barely begun to lighten. How early had she been awoken with the news? The Duke has turned out all the guard, and they're searching the city. He seems confident we'll find him. Lily didn't sound like she shared her future father-in-law's optimism, and I understood her concern. The Duchy of Marin was a city-state, by far the largest city either of us had ever seen. It must have a great many hiding places.
and that was assuming he hadn't made it across the border into southern Talinos, or across the straits to one of the other kingdoms. I groaned. The Duke was never going to find him. And who knew what danger Cole would stir up? Every indication suggested he had been deep in his father's plot to steal John's father's throne, a plot we had only just managed to foil. And his treachery against the Duke was actually the smaller concern. The darkness we had defeated in Marin had started in Palinar. The locals assured us that a curse so large and so devastating could only be the result of a kingdom turning their backs on the godmothers and breaching the ancient laws. Except, no one knew what laws had been violated, or even the exact nature of the curse. They had simply noticed one day that no one had been seen leaving Palinar in weeks. Weeks that became months. Travellers and merchants who attempted to enter turned back with tales of desolate wastelands roamed by wild animals, a new feature in the once prosperous kingdom. The last group had turned back after rescuing a man who had been mauled by a bear. I had sought out the man after winning the tourney, but the rumours had been true. While his physical injuries had been healed, his confusion of the mind remained. He raved about a curse and a beastly prince, but his words made little sense. Of the other royals, Prince Dominic's parents and younger sister, he would say only that they were gone. Palinar was cursed, along with my betrothed, emptied of people and full of wild beasts, shrouded with darkness which had begun to infect the other kingdoms. Its power had even reached out through Prince Dominic and twisted the tourney he had called, nearly destroying Marin. And Cole and his family had originally come from Palinar, moving to Marin long before the curse had cut Palinar off from the other kingdoms. But John, Lily, and I believed they had not escaped the reaches of the curse. The pride and greed in their hearts had provided fertile ground for the darkness that had already spread so far out of Palinar. So if Cole had escaped, that meant the curse had another agent roaming free, spreading the seeds of destruction further afield. "Let me know how the search goes," I projected, desperately wishing I could be there with Lily and John instead of riding alone in a strange and magical carriage toward a strange and terrifying fate. She agreed, but she sounded distracted, and I knew I wouldn't be hearing any more of the story today. I wished I had been able to pack one or two books, but my saddlebags had been full to overflowing with basic necessities. There had been no room for such luxuries, and I hadn't expected to have the opportunity to read. I didn't know if a book would be enough to distract me right now, with yet another worry chasing around in my mind. But even the feel of one in my hand would have been comforting, like a little taste of home. My sister-in-law, Alyssa, had been largely responsible for the education of Lily and me, and she had a never-ending love of books. Lily had never stopped grumbling about it, although I noted she spent a lot of time in the library studying between tourney events. But I had come to share Alyssa's love, or at least her love of fairy tales. Stories were exciting, since you never knew what you might find, what answers they might hold. But at the same time, books were also solid and dependable. Once you found a favourite, it never changed. Would my new home have books? It was hard to imagine the infamous beast sitting down to an afternoon read. I just hoped whichever castle he had chosen for his lair had a garden. If I couldn't have fairy tales, I hoped I could have roses. Since summer had only just started, the ones in Marin had still been in bloom, and I had been sorry to leave them. Books reminded me of the comfort of home, but roses filled me with an alluring sense of hope, for surely any wonder was possible in a world that could produce such beauty. Which made it just as hard to picture the beast surrounded by roses as books. Nothing but disappointment could be gained by hoping for the familiar comforts of home in the trial ahead of me. Better, by far, to prepare myself for the worst. Almost a certainty given the situation.
especially since I had now spent 2 full days travelling through Palinar, and I couldn't remember having seen a single flower. Lily kept me updated, but unfortunately she had no real news. The search continued, but they had found no sign of coal. The hours dragged on, and I ate the last of my food for a midday meal. My water was running low too, since I hadn't dared to fill it at any of the streams we had encountered during our rest breaks. Chestnut apparently had no qualms slaking her thirst at the waterways, but I didn't trust anything in this cursed place. I could only hope we arrived at our destination, wherever that was, soon. The carriage jolted and bumped, as the wheels hit a new surface. Peering out the window, I could see nothing but the endless plain, so I climbed onto the other seat to look out the front window. The road stretched ahead of us, its surface rougher than the smooth path through the flat wastelands. We seemed to be slowly climbing uphill, and in the distance I could see a line of trees. They disappeared into darkness, so I could only assume it was the start of a forest. I sighed. On the one hand, a change of scenery would be nice, providing a sense of progress that had eluded me in the constant plains. But on the other hand, I didn't like the ideas of trees pressing in close to the side of the road. I would have no line of sight, and the memory of the wolves still lingered in my mind. Given how far away the trees looked, we seemed to approach them impossibly fast. Soon the path was indeed cutting its way through a forest, thick and dark. To make it worse, the temperature had started to drop, despite the season, and I heard the distant howl of wolves. The carriage raced through the trees, and I shivered as the air continued to grow colder. Rummaging through my bags, I put on a cloak. I had no sooner fastened the garment than I saw a snowflake drift past the window. Soon it was joined by another, and then a larger flurry. Within minutes it was snowing constantly, patches of white building between the trees. Yet another sign of the disease infecting this kingdom. Marin had been bright and sunny and full of flowers when I left, as summer should be. But apparently in this forest it was perpetually winter. My last hope of any flowers dissipated. Before long I started to worry that the carriage would become bogged in the snow, and the howls of the wolves sounded closer, unless that was just my anxiety fooling my mind. Our pace slowed, although the snowfall did not, and I peered out the back at Chestnut. She looked uneasy for the first time since I had tied her to the vehicle. Was it the wolves or the increasing snow? Possibly both. I reached out to Lily, wanting to update her on my situation, but also looking for comfort. She was asleep, however. Napping, presumably, after her disrupted night. I didn't try again, not wanting to disturb her rest. The snow built up on the road until I felt sure we would be forced to stop. But just before the drifts became too deep for passage, the carriage swerved. I nearly lost my balance, sliding across the seat, and had to scramble back into position. I wanted to see our new path. I hadn't noticed a branch in the road, but then I had been considerably distracted. The new path appeared better tended than the main one, and the snow seemed to be lightening. Mounds of white heaped beside the path, but none had settled on the road itself. Yet another marvel in this unpleasant place. It occurred to me that I might be finally nearing my destination. In a flurry of movement, I collected all my escaped belongings and squeezed them into the saddlebags, not worrying about what I was crushing in the process. For a moment, I considered trying to change into a fresh dress, but I quickly abandoned the idea. The rattling carriage would make a poor dressing room, and I didn't like the idea of being caught halfway through the process. I regretted the lost opportunity, though. I would have liked to impress my new fiancé and demonstrate that a princess of Arcadia was a person of significance. I was coming alone into his home, but I didn't want him to think me weak and defenceless. I hoped his letters, calling the tawny and then summoning me to him, were proof that whatever beast-like qualities he possessed,
he retained his mental faculties. Surely he wouldn't risk bringing further harm to himself by violating the covenant of the Princess Tawny, not to mention antagonizing a new kingdom of whose strength he knew nothing. The carriage turned again, and I gasped. The rest of the forest dropped away as we rolled through an aisle of orange trees. Despite the snow heaped on the ground, the branches of the trees bore both fruit and blossoms, an even more impossible feat than snow in summer. A shiver ran through me at the beautiful and chilling sight. Welcome to my new home. Chapter 3. As we approached the end of the Isle of Trees, I glimpsed visions of a garden spread to either side. Greenery blossomed from the snow with bright colours splashing against the white. My earlier desire for flowers passed through my mind, and I shuddered. How could I ever enjoy such eerie, enchanted blooms? The carriage drove out from the trees and came to a stop in front of a large castle. A wide, shallow staircase of grey stone led up to vast wooden doors. The building branched off in both directions, huge, imposing, and dark, full of twisted stone and dim shadows. I could see no sign of anyone. The snow had ceased to fall, but the chill in the air remained, and I had no desire to remain in the carriage after my long voyage. And yet still I lingered, trying to convince my legs to move and carry me into this strange unknown. The door of the carriage swung open of its own accord, the message loud and clear. I reminded myself I hadn't come this far to lose courage now, and hauled my saddlebags out into the snow, unwilling to leave them in an enchanted vehicle that might disappear at any moment. Once I stood beside them, I hesitated, however. My rumpled dress and travel-stained face presented enough of an undignified appearance, without tottering under the weight of heavy bags. Finally, I decided to leave them in the snow, next to Chestnut, who I untied from the carriage and secured to one of the stone balustrades. Surely I would find some servants inside the castle and could request them to care for my mount and possessions. Taking a deep breath, I climbed the stairs, my stiff legs protesting the sudden exertion. As I approached the doors, I wondered if I would have the strength to push them open. I needn't have worried, however. When I reached them, they swung open of their own accord, just as the carriage door had done. I peered into the cavernous entryway revealed by the open doors. Would my betrothed now appear? Had he been the one to grant me access to his castle? But, once again, I could see no one. I walked inside, trying not to let my trembling legs disrupt my steps. I had never encountered a royal residence that felt so empty. Where were all the people of Palinar? The doors closed behind me with a thunderous crash, and I jumped. Whirling around, I tried to control my dread. For now, my future lay within this castle. It mattered not if the door were open or closed. I was effectively trapped here either way. Still, I felt an unreasonable relief when I discovered a small, normal-sized door within one of the larger ones, and found it unlocked. If I couldn't find any servants, I would need to tend to Chestnut myself, which was, of course, the sole source of my relief. With the doors now closed, the air temperature inside the castle felt significantly warmer than outside. Without conscious thought, my feet led me to a fire burning in a large fireplace against one wall. Would Lily be awake by now? I decided I didn't care. The situation was simply too strange not to share with her.
Lily, you won't believe where I've ended up.
The emptiness around me reverberated in my mind. I froze and called out again.
Lily? Lily?
Still nothing. My heart, which had already been beating fast, sped up. For a moment, panic overwhelmed me, and I screamed her name over and over again in my mind. Lily! 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 Horrible possibilities streamed through my mind. She had fallen from her horse and been killed. Cole had found and murdered her in an act of revenge. I tried to stem the panic. My twin could not have died without my sensing it. We were too connected for that, I felt sure of it. You couldn't lose half of yourself without knowing about it. Perhaps she was simply busy and unable to respond. But that thought brought no comfort. If Lily were distracted or asleep, she might not answer. But I would still sense her presence at the end of my projection, as I had done earlier. I could even wake her if I needed, as she had done to me in the carriage. I tried to remember the last time I had spoken to her and couldn't pinpoint it. We had never found a physical limitation to our communication, but we had never been so far apart before. Perhaps the distance was simply too vast. I tried again, more calmly this time, paying attention to my projection. My silent words flew out, projecting away from me in a way my ordinary thoughts did not. I expected them to fade out, overwhelmed by distance, but the sensation more closely resembled slamming into a wall. I had been too shocked and panicked to notice it earlier, but it felt unmistakable now. My knees gave out, and I sank into a soft armchair pulled up to the fire. I was on my own. Truly on my own. Uncontrollable shivers shook me. Lily and I had been connected since before I could remember. I had never really been alone before. Fear rushed over me, roiling in my belly and clouding my mind. My connection to the outside world was gone, along with my main source of companionship. What if something did happen to Lily? Would I sense it behind this strange mental wall? I had found courage to face the beast because I knew I would carry my sister with me, but he had stripped even that away from me. Anger and hatred welled inside me, burning back some of the fear. Was there anything I was not expected to sacrifice? A soft sound from the other side of the entryway made me leap to my feet. The light of the fire beside me faded into dimness on the other side of the room, but enough light remained for me to glimpse movement. I drew back, the fear returning to the fore. Then I stiffened my spine and fed the anger, driving back the terror.
"Who's there?"
I called loudly.
"Show yourself!"
The dark figure hesitated and then stepped forward toward me. I gasped and moved to place the armchair between us. Prince Dominic, for surely it must be he, towered above me. He wore no circlet or crown, but he carried himself like someone used to wielding power and authority. His broad shoulders barely fit into his jacket, the material bunching strangely around their unnatural shape. His light brown hair reached to his shoulders, matted and wild, and the backs of his hands, the only bit of skin I could see other than his face, looked abnormally hairy. His mouth and jaw seemed to sit oddly, but otherwise his face looked surprisingly human, more so than I had expected and feared. The relief soothed some of my initial shock. Perhaps I had been unnecessarily apprehensive. The strangeness of the castle and his furtive arrival exacerbating my nerves. I tried to focus on his eyes, which were a strangely piercing blue, and were the most normal-looking part of him. In fact, I thought I detected hesitation and uncertainty in them, and if he felt nervous, even a little, it meant I had some power in this situation too. I forced myself to step around the armchair again and drop into a curtsy. I waited for him to speak, but he said nothing, simply measuring me with those bright eyes. Anger, fear, frustration, and resentment swelled through me in such a confused mess that I began to feel numb to all of them. He had brought me all this way alone. Did he truly have nothing to say? I broke the silence.
"Greetings. I am Princess Sophia of Arcadia. I assume you are Prince Dominic, my betrothed."
He inclined his upper body slightly in acknowledgement, but still said nothing, too haughty or sullen to speak. I reached out to Lily in my mind, knowing she would share my outrage. The emptiness in my mind hit me again and I nearly collapsed. A single tear managed to escape my eye. I glanced back at my betrothed,
and saw that his gaze had fixed on my face where the drop of moisture still rolled down my cheek. How dare he stand there and judge me? I snapped. They call you the Beast, but I had hoped some part of the Royal Prince remained. I spat at him. I see now that I was wrong. They told me your kingdom was once the largest and most magnificent in these lands. How far noble Palinar has fallen. An expression that I couldn't read passed across his face. And then he opened his mouth, and I saw why his jaw looked misshapen. Inside he had a row of fangs instead of normal teeth. They glistened in the firelight as a low, menacing growl rippled through the room. I stumbled backwards and hit the chair, my own mouth dropping open in horror. He stepped toward me, and I rushed to put the piece of furniture between us again. I couldn't imagine the chair would prove much of an impediment to him, but something about my action angered him. He threw back his head and roared. The deafening sound filled the entryway, and the last of my courage disappeared. I turned and fled, pushing through the first door I found. I ran through stone passageways, noticing nothing of my surroundings, all my attention focused on listening for sounds of pursuit. Candle sconces sprang into flame ahead of me, lighting a passage through the castle. I considered fleetingly that the lights might be leading me into a trap, but I couldn't face any of the dark, unlit corridors. My legs protested the exertion after so long immobile in the carriage, but my terror kept me moving forward. Ahead of me the lights stopped, but I had time for only a single pang of apprehension before a wooden door in the corridor wall swung open. The warm glow of a fire poured out to fill the darkness. I pivoted and threw myself into the room, slamming the door closed behind me. I leaned against it, my heart pounding and my breath rasping through my throat, while I surveyed the room. The large bedchamber was lavishly appointed in green and gold, the furniture solid and elegant. The four-poster bed looked soft, and a small fire burned cheerfully. Best of all, the room looked completely empty. I checked the door for a key, but found none. A small chest of drawers stood against the wall next to the door, so I pushed it, heaving until it slid across the doorway. An image of the Beast's broad shoulders flashed through my mind, but I ignored it. The room had heavier pieces of furniture, but I would have no hope of moving them. This one would have to be enough. My stomach rumbled, my body overruling my fear with other needs. For the first time, I noticed a small table tucked next to the fireplace and laden with a tray of food. I looked around the room again, but I was still alone. The bowl looked as if it held some sort of stew, the aroma rising from it, enticing enough to make my mouth water. Sinking into a well-placed chair, I devoured the fresh, hot food, calculating the hour since I had anything other than travel fare. Already the long, boring voyage seemed impossibly distant. When I had finished, I knew it must still be early, but I had no desire to step foot outside my room. Instead, I explored the inside, examining the large desk and peering into the wardrobe. As I pulled the ornate walnut doors open, I stumbled back, gasping. A row of dresses hung inside, several of them recognizable as gowns from my saddlebags. Rushing through the room, I pulled open all the drawers I could find, as well as the large chest at the foot of the bed. I had soon located the entire contents of my bags, carefully distributed around the room. Shame filled me. In my fear, I had completely forgotten about my saddlebags, and more importantly, Chestnut. I had left her shivering in the cold while I filled my belly and warmed myself. I looked around the room again. I had still seen no physical sign of a servant, but someone had clearly retrieved my bags and unpacked them. Surely the same person would have cared for my horse. It seemed a certainty. Surely... I regarded the drawers in front of the door doubtfully. Should I go and check on Chestnut? I couldn't remember the way through the castle, but perhaps the candles would show me the way again. I imagined myself stumbling through the dark stone corridors, straining to hear the soft footfall of the Beast around each corner. When I shook myself from the vision,
I found my hands had already stripped off my dress and pulled my nightgown from a drawer. I flung it over my head and dived beneath the covers of the bed, blowing out the candles as I went and leaving only the soft glow of the fire to light the room. I buried my face in my pillow and wept. I could only hope my mysterious helper had indeed cared for Chestnut, and that the poor animal wouldn't have to pay the price for my cowardice. Because I had come so far, but now, at the end, my courage had failed me. Lily would have been braver. The thought of my sister only increased the flow of my tears. Chapter 4. I must have fallen into an exhausted slumber, because when I awoke, the fire had died and daylight shone through the windows. I reached out instinctively to Lily in my mind, and the emptiness hit me like a physical blow. Curling in on myself, I fought back a fresh wave of tears. I had always known coming here wouldn't be easy, but I had thought I would have Lily in my mind to give me strength. How would I survive alone in this strange place? I let my mind dwell on Marin for a moment. Had they found Cole, or were they still busy turning the city inside out? What was Lily making of our sudden disconnection? I knew she would be sick with worry, and hoped John had prevented her from rashly rushing after me. I thought of her galloping toward Palinar, and the howls of the wolves sounded loudly in my mind. I shivered. Forcing myself to breathe deeply, I sat up. No good would come from moping and dreaming and crying. I needed a plan. Lily and I had never truly understood our unusual gift. It had always simply worked. Until now, suddenly, it didn't. I sighed. If only we had spent more time experimenting and trying to understand our connection. More information might have helped me in this situation. But even without it, I was determined to discover what was blocking our connection and find a way around it. I looked around at the lush bedchamber. Since my questing projections continued to run up against an invisible wall, I didn't think I would find any answers in my room. Which meant I needed to get up and explore my surroundings. The roar of my fiancé from the night before echoed through my mind, as ominous as the howling of wolves. I took another deep breath and realized I'd twisted two strands of hair so tightly around my finger I was threatening the blood flow. I forced myself to relax and slip out of bed. Instead of the expected cold stone, my feet landed on a soft rug, sinking into the thick piles. I wiggled my toes, enjoying the luxury after my previous nights in the carriage. I needed to focus on the positives, or I would lose every last shred of my bravery. I examined the room again in daylight. The curtains were flung wide since I hadn't stopped to close them before diving into bed. I walked over to the windows to peer out. From the view, I guessed my room to be on the third floor, and vaguely remembered fleeing upstairs the night before. The room had an incredible vista looking out over extensive gardens. They had clearly been carefully sculpted, and appeared well cared for, although I could see no sign of any gardeners at work. No footsteps showed up in the glistening carpet of snow either. My eyes stung from the brightness of the white, so incongruous against the green leaves and vivid petals. I couldn't imagine wandering through such a strange landscape. A small glimpse of a stone building off to one side looked like stables. My shame from the night before flooded me again, and I immediately decided to make the building my first goal. My stomach rumbled, reminding me I hadn't eaten yet, but I resolutely ignored it. I had failed in my responsibility to my mount the night before. I wouldn't fail again. Pushing aside the chest of drawers, I stepped out into the stone corridor and looked up and down, hoping to see something familiar. But both directions looked the same, an expanse of cold grey, broken by regular sconces. The stable-like building had been to my right when I stood at the window, so I turned left, heading in that direction. I would look for stairs to take me down, and then any door to the outside I could find. As I walked, I pretended to myself that I felt calm and confident, the new mistress of the castle, exploring my domain. But my ears strained for the sound of footfalls behind me, and my eyes flickered toward every shadow, looking for a looming shape. I saw nothing, but soft noises reached my ears. I twitched and looked behind me, but the passageway remained empty. I walked on, descending a set of stairs that took me all the way to ground level. Again I heard the sound, like a faint rustling or whispering, and spun around. Still nothing. I picked up my pace, looking for any promising door, anxious to be free from the stifling walls that hedged me in. The sound, like a breeze through leaves, sounded again, and I broke into a run, resolutely keeping my eyes ahead. A door appeared, and I rushed to it, hoping to find it unlocked. A desperate surge of disappointment washed over me as the door resisted me, and then it seemed to fling itself open, almost tumbling me into the snow outside. I staggered and regained my balance, striding quickly into the garden. The cold air hit me just as the first sensation of damp penetrated my thin slippers. I should have taken the time to dress in boots and a jacket. I glanced back at the door to find it had mysteriously closed behind me. I wrapped my arms around myself and hurried on, unwilling to backtrack and unsure I could even find my way back to my room. As I got closer, it became obvious that the building I had seen was indeed a stable. The familiar smell of horses overwhelmed the exotic aroma of the unnatural flowers, and I heard a nicker emanating from inside. My heart surged with hope. If the castle had horses, it must have someone to tend them. And surely whoever was responsible for that task could have cared for Chestnut after I abandoned her. I moved quickly, almost running into the warm aisle between the rows of stalls. A couple of horses nickered a welcome, while another one snorted loudly, stomping one hoof. My gaze flickered over them, travelling down the row until I found a familiar head hanging over a stall door. I ran over and flung my arms around Chestnut's neck. We had made it this far together, and I still hated how close I had come to failing her. She huffed a soft greeting and began nosing at my dress, clearly hoping for a treat of some kind. I laughed shakily and stepped back, apologizing for coming empty-handed. Her coat had felt smooth and soft. Clearly she had been groomed since our trek through the wilderness. I would need to offer my thanks to the stable master, if he ever made an appearance. A soft sound behind me, like the shifting of weight, informed me that I had company. "Greetings," I said as I started to turn. I had begun to wonder— My words fell away as my eyes absorbed my company. Somehow Prince Dominic looked even more terrifying in the otherwise familiar setting of a stable, his unnatural features obvious in the daylight. I quelled a strong desire to flee back out into the gardens. The beast towered over me. If he wanted to catch me, I couldn't possibly escape him. Running would only make me look foolish. He looked as frozen as me, obviously surprised to be disturbed. I followed his outstretched arm to where his hairy hand rested on the neck of a large jet-black stallion, who eyed me warily. The stance surprised me. My mental image of him hadn't included an affinity with animals. Perhaps it should have, though, since he seemed part animal himself. The large horse looked aggressive, and I had to admit that I would be nervous to mount him. And yet I didn't doubt that Prince Dominic could easily control him. Something about the quiet moment between them suggested both power and something softer. For an unthinking moment, I thought that I would like to join him on a ride, to see him galloping across a field on the black horse. And then my eyes focused on the strange shape of his mouth, and the way his shoulders bulged unnaturally under his jacket, his misshapen body a constant reminder of his curse. I remembered who he was and everything I had already suffered at his instigation. My anger flared, but a decent night's sleep and the reassurance of daylight helped me to repress the fear. Like it or not, I was stuck here, at least for now. I needed to find a way to make this work. I tried to think of something I could say that would balance my true feelings with some attempt at conciliation. Your stable is well kept and the horse is beautiful. Do you come here often? He stared at me, the intensity of his blue eyes seeming to communicate a message. If only I knew how to interpret it. He raised his free hand, as if in greeting, and for a moment I thought he was finally going to speak. But instead he gave a long growl, his lower jaw thrusting forward to reveal his sharp fangs. I recoiled slightly, a burst of energy urging me to be afraid, to run while I still could. But the instinctive response was quickly overwhelmed by an invigorating anger. Since the moment I had stepped foot in these lands, I had been swept up in a series of unpleasant experiences engineered by this prince to force me to come here. And yet he treated me like an unwelcome intruder. I put my hands on my hips and glared at him. "Do you truly have nothing to say to me? Are we not betrothed, beast?" I hoped the title would provoke him into speech, but he merely glared back at me. Our standoff stretched out, as we stared at each other, neither moving. After a long moment, the stallion neighed and tossed his head, disrupting the beast's hand. The prince shook his shaggy head and transferred his grim gaze to the animal. The stallion ignored him, and the beast turned and strode from the building. I sagged a little and took a deep breath. I hadn't made any headway with my new betrothed, but at least I had conquered my own fear. And Chestnut seemed happy and well cared for, which left me free to begin my explorations. As I walked back toward the castle, I looked around, sure I would now see tracks in the snow. Sure enough, a set of large indents led from the stable around the main building and disappeared off toward the front entrance. They clearly belonged to the beast, a name which fitted my betrothed much better than Dominic. No other prince appeared, however, as if the beast and I were alone in this well-kept place. I frowned. Something was even more wrong with this kingdom than I had imagined. While I tried to find a way around the block preventing me from projecting to Lily, I wouldn't forget my original goal. I needed to find out what had happened here and how to reverse it, and hopefully, while doing that, I would find a way to break my engagement. The sooner I could leave the beast behind forever, the better. I certainly had no intention of ever letting him touch me. I shuddered at the thought of being that close to him. I followed the footprints, confident the beast would be long gone to whatever lair he usually frequented. For the second time, I trod the shallow stairs and paused in front of the huge doors. The castle lacked the cultivated feeling of the magical garden. Instead, it felt dark and ominous, even in the bright morning light. I felt sure that every crevice in this cavernous place must be full of dust. The doors didn't swing open for me this time, and I pushed at the small door cut into one of the bigger ones. It swung open reluctantly, and I sighed before entering the entrance hall. The garden still made me nervous, but I found it less repugnant than I had expected. The open air turned out to be preferable to the gloomy castle. Inside, I faced a broad staircase that rose upwards before splitting into two. I had already decided to follow the stairs as high as they would take me. It seemed too simple to hope that height would allow me to bypass the mysterious wall blocking my projections, but I had to try everything, just in case. As I stepped forward, my stomach twisted, reminding me that I still hadn't eaten. As if on cue, a door in the far corner of the entrance hall swung wide, allowing me a glimpse of a long, dark dining table. My feet turned toward it, following the instructions of my stomach over my mind. Sunlight streamed through a row of tall windows that faced onto yet more gardens to the rear of the castle. The oversized room contained the longest table I had ever seen. It looked particularly out of place in this empty land, and the food that had been laid out at one end looked small and lonely. But when I approached the single seat that had been set for a meal, I realized the size of the table had been deceiving. There was actually enough food for a miniature feast. It was merely dwarfed by the expanse of empty wood. More food than I could possibly eat had been laid out in gleaming bowls and platters. I paused. Was this the beast's meal? Surely even he could not eat this much. I peered around the room but could see no one. After a moment of deliberation, I sat. As much as I regretted it, this was my home now, and I had to eat. If the beast